Hi, Mr. Schudi. Hi, Mr. Muimang.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Bhattadev.
Hi, Honorable Siabangena.
Siabangena.
I know you are on as agri.
You know, I think I'm going to resign from the NCOP and become a mayor. There are so many DA mayors these days.
No, I think the stage is yours. We are coming next time.
Tim,
we'll stage a spectacular comeback.
Tim,
yes.
Start singing. Rub it in. Rub it in.
No, I'm being unkind to my friend. I'm sorry. I'm just teasing.
No. It's a reality. You have an upper hand now.
Yeah, we must still work together.
Yes, no, definitely.
In government, yeah.
Exactly. That's honorable Khai.
We need 6 provinces.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, I'm struggling to
connect.
Hey.
I'm sitting in the passages of Parliament, you know.
Sir, I'm sorry. Where is your office?
It's on the other side. I if I get there, I'll be too late.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Honorable. Matia, can you please send me on my Gmail? I don't know if you've done so already. My link, the link I'm struggling to use.
Yeah. Am I not disturbing you guys?
I have done so, Chi, but I'll send it again.
No, don't worry if you send it on my Gmail, because I'm struggling with the parliament email. Oh, don't worry, I've got it here on my Gmail. Sorry.
Yeah, but
seems
like I've resent it to everybody.
Oh, okay. No, I've just opened because I'm struggling. That's why I've been delaying to log in. Because this parliamentary email is giving me problems. I tried to take it to ICT yesterday when I was in Parliament physical, but it looks like they have not sorted it out.
Mine is too full. I need to get it cleared.
Okay, now I'm
you must be careful using the parliamentary email address. State security can track you.
Yeah, now I'm connected. Yes, I really struggle with the parliament. It's something that is recent, actually. I'd say, I think it's already 4 o'clock now. Good afternoon.
Recording in progress.
I don't know what else is here. Matia, if you can indicate, please.
Yes, Chair, we've got representatives from the Free State Provincial Department of Economic Development, the Free State, the Mangaung Metro, Transnet, the DTIC. I have not seen anybody from the Free State Development Corporation, but if they are, they can just indicate. And then also, Chair, I see that I'm looking for the parliamentary legal advisor. I'm trying to admit her, but I haven't seen her yet in the participants because she's supposed to be part.
No, she's here.
Oh, I see her. And then also Deputy Minister Gina is on the platform, Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. No, thank you very much. Good afternoon, honourable members, honourable Deputy Minister. I'm not sure if we have the MEC from Free State. Can I get an indication? Oh, okay, not. Honourable members, we have amended the agenda for this afternoon. If you remember, last week we were getting a presentation from the Department of Labour on two bills, the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, as well as the COIDA. During the presentation, Mr. Mkalipe from the Department of Employment and Labor indicated that there's a particular section that was not in the original bill that was submitted to Parliament, that they would like it to be discussed or debated by the NCOP, but unfortunately it didn't go to the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. So that then we requested for a legal advice, and we then promised that the legal advisor was going to look at the issue and then come back to the committee. So we have accommodated her to take us through that legal opinion, and then we take a decision as members on the issue. We'd like to apologize to the department, Honorable Deputy Minister, and also the Free State, that we will start with this particular issue, and then we go back to the original a program scheduled for today. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to give the opportunity to Ms. Isaac, the legal advisor, parliamentary legal advisor, and then the Office of the State Law Advisor, our procedural advisor, and then I'll also give an opportunity to the Department of Employment and Labor, and then the members will then ask questions and make comments. Can we quickly do that? Can I give it to you, Mr. Isaac? We have circulated the legal opinion to all members. I know it's a 7-page document. If you can just summarize it in few minutes. Can I first, before Ms. Isaac come in, do we have the Office of the State Law Advisor represented?
Yes, Chair, yeah.
Oh,
Mr. Masabin, yes.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks. Can we start with Ms. Isaac?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to the Chairperson, members of the committee, colleagues and guests. As you indicated, Chairperson, last week our office was requested to draft a legal opinion on the amendment proposed by the Department of Employment and Labor. As you indicated, the opinion was a written opinion that was provided to members. I will summarize the key points. So as way of background, last week during the briefing, the official of the department indicated that the department wished to propose a further amendment to the Employment Equity Bill. They indicated that this amendment was omitted from the introduced bill. So the department is proposing an amendment to Section 42(1)(a) of the Employment Equity Act of 1998. The current reading of is as follows. In determining whether a designated employer is implementing employment equity in compliance with the Act, the Director General or any person or body applying this Act may, in addition to the factors stated in Section 15, take the following into account. And the section that is proposed for amendment is a subsection A, and it reads, the extent to which suitably qualified people from and amongst the different designated groups are equitably represented within each occupational level in that employer's workforce in relation to the demographic profile of the national and regional economically active population. The department is proposing that the wording national and regional economically active populations now be changed to national or regional economically active population. So just by way of background, I just would like to alert the committee that this bill process began in with the department in October 2017, and they'd undertaken a long consultation process until the bill was gazetted in on the 20th July 2020. So in that process, they had not included this amendment in the bill. The bill was introduced before the National Assembly on the 21st July 2020 and referred to the Portfolio Committee. The Portfolio Committee undertook a public participation and had received submissions and had public hearings over 3 days. During this process, the department did not alert the Portfolio Committee of the amendment that they're now proposing. It was only towards the tail end of the process that the department official indicated that the committee should consider this amendment. The chairperson of the Portfolio Committee decided not to consider this amendment. So those are just way of background information that the committee needs to consider when considering this amendment. We were asked to look at what procedure must be used in considering the proposed amendment. So with regard to the rules of the National Council of Provinces, I would draw the members' attention to Rule 210, which provides for the committee's functions in relation to processing of Section 75 bills. In particular, of relevance to this matter is Rule 210(1), Item I, which says the select committee or other council committee to which the bill is referred may recommend approval or rejection of the bill or present an amendment bill. So with regard to discussing this particular matter as our understanding of the law, so in our interpretation of the NCOP Rule 210(1)(i), the committee may consider amendments to the bill before it. It's our office view that this is a Section 75 bill, but the NCOP rules do not limit the committee from considering the proposed amendment before it. This amendment is not in the bill, but it is an amendment to the Principal Act. However, I would like the committee to note that we have consulted with the procedural officers at the NCOP table, and they have indicated that the NCOP table have a different interpretation of this rule. Their view is that this particular amendment may be procedurally out of order, but Chairperson, as you indicated, they will speak to that their interpretation. So the question that the committee must first consider is this amendment procedurally in order in terms of the rules of the National Council of Provinces? If the amendment is procedurally in order, then the next consideration that the committee must pay attention to is that this amendment was not considered by the Portfolio Committee. And the rules of the National Assembly provide that in certain instances, a committee may consult with the chairperson of a portfolio committee or the portfolio committee itself. So Rule 210(1)(b) provides that accordingly. So in light of the background factors that this bill was, this proposed amendment was not considered by the portfolio committee, before this committee embarks on this process, it may just be prudent for them to consult with the chairperson to find out the reasons as to why she deemed it appropriate not to proceed with this amendment. Once the committee, if the committee decides that and they do wish to proceed with the amendment, then we will just alert the committee that the Constitution requires the NCOP to facilitate public involvement in its law points, which indicate that this is a constitutional requirement, and therefore it is imperative that this proposed amendment, if proceeded with, is subjected to public scrutiny. The case of South African Veterinary Association indicates the need that where an amendment is proposed at a committee level, if and that amendment affects particular sectors of the population, then that amendment must be subjected to public scrutiny. Further, in light of the fact that this amendment is being introduced at a very late stage in the process, the public is not aware of it. Various parliamentary processes have been concluded without the public being alerted of this amendment. We would advise the committee that if it is of the view that it should proceed with this amendment, that they must ensure widespread public participation. Employment equity is an issue of national importance, and it is therefore very important that there is a public scrutiny of this amendment. Even if the department is of the view that it is a technical amendment, it is for the public to make their input before the committee concludes its process, so the committee makes an informed decision. So, Chairperson, in summary, the three points are that, firstly, the committee, we recommend that the committee seek the advice of the NCOP's table staff regarding to the procedural matter as to whether this rule is procedurally or in order in terms of the NCOP rules. We also recommend that if the amendment is procedurally sound, and the committee consider consulting with the chairperson of the portfolio committee about her reasons for not proceeding with this amendment, as this is a Section 75 bill and it will have to go back to the portfolio committee. Lastly, and importantly, if this amendment is proceeded with, we would advise the committee to ensure that there is widespread public participation, and this could be through the form of an advert to indicate to the public that this is a proposed amendment. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Eisen. Can we then get the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, Sisa?
Thanks, Chair. Am I fine without the video, Chair?
We prefer that you put your
video on.
Yeah.
Okay. We try to.
Thank you.
I hope the network won't. Thanks, Chair. We share the understanding of the roles of the NCOP chairperson, particularly Rule 210, that is expressed by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor with regard to how they are interpreting it, Chair, that the NCOP, the committee, the rules of the committee do not, the rules of the NCOP do not limit the committee from proposing amendments to the other sections of the Principal Act. So we share that, Chair. We also have the understanding that the opinion of the Parliamentary Legal Advisor is that the committee should err on the side of caution, especially in view of the CC judgment and the rulings of the presiding officers on the matter. So, Chair, we align ourselves with those views, Chair. We don't see anything. The only issue, Chair, that we would like to point out is that in considering expressing or taking a decision on the issue of whether to consult the chairperson of the NCOP, the committee should consider that Section 75(1)(c) of the Constitution still requires that the bill will be referred back to the National Assembly if it proposes an amendment to it. So it's a discretion, or it's a discretion that you have to take as the committee, whether to consult the chairperson of the committee or not. So, but you should be aware that you still need to refer the bill back to the NCO, to the National Assembly, if you do agree to the amendment.
Thank you very much. No, I think the issue is whether NCOP can make amendments that are not necessarily in the bill that has been put before it. Can it just make amendments on a principal act? Because what is it before us is not the principal act, but it's the bill. And in the bill, there's no this particular section. So what members would like to be clarified on, whether the NCOP has a right to consider a matter that is not in the bill, a matter that the is in the principal act. If you can just clarify that aspect here. We understand that if we make amendments or any other amendments, those will have to go back to the NA for consideration. Yes. But on this specific one, it's not a matter that is in the bill. So that's why we want clarity on that aspect.
Yes, Chair. That's why, Chair, we're saying we are aligning with the views of the Parliamentary Legal Advisor in as expressed in paragraph 12 of their opinion, that in respect of Section 75 Amendment Bill, the NCOP rules do not limit the committee from proposing amendments to other sections of the Principal Act. And this particular section, Chairperson, it's Section 42. Section 42 is already before the committee as an introduced section. It's just that we're amending a different subsection. You know, we're amending subsection Y. It's just that we're adding a new subparagraph to the same section. Now, what would be happening is we would be adding an amendment to paragraph A in the same subsection Y. So, section 42 is before the committee already. It's just that you'll be adding another amendment to that section. So, it's not a section that is not before the committee, that it's not considered by the committee.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can we ask Mr. Samar Ali, our procedural officer?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. Chairperson, we have consulted with legal with regards to the matter that's before the committee. Our concern is more of a more procedural in nature rather than legal. The biggest concern is that the Constitution allows the Council to consider, to propose amendments.
That's right. I get cut off all the...
Honourable Dango, can you please mute your mic? Honourable Dango? Honourable Dango? I see he has not muted his mic. He might disrupt us anytime. Okay, you can continue.
May I proceed, Chair?
Yes, please.
Thank you. The Constitution in terms of Section 75 is very clear. The Council can either pass a Section 75 bill, pass it with subject to amendments, or reject the bill. When we're speaking of this, Chair, we're speaking actually to the bill that's before the committee, not the Principal Act. I do agree with my colleague that Section 42 is being amended. However, the specific provision that they want to be amended or requesting an amendment on is not contained in the amendment bill. Our interpretation at the Council is that the committee, through the Council, will only consider the bill that's before it. We cannot read into the bill, nor can we interpret provisions into the bill, which is the current request from the department. Reading further into that, I do agree with my legal colleague that in terms of public participation, it's a tantamount issue. We cannot forsake it. The bill has already been through the National Assembly processes, and it has been for public participation. It has been through the public participation processes thus far. After considering that, the bill was then sent to the National Council of Provinces. We cannot now propose an amendment that's different or outside the provisions that were that form part of the bill that was referred to the council. This will not be in accordance with Council Rule 210 sub 1H, which strictly prohibits a committee from considering amendments that will read that will render a bill constitutionally or procedurally irregular. Chairperson, it's for this reason that we would say that this amendment not be proceeded with by the committee. We will, however, recommend that should the department want to proceed with this amendment, that they do so via an amendment bill in the National Assembly. Remember that the NCOP does not have the powers to initiate Section 75 legislation. Should we read this provision or this amendment into the bill, we will, technically speaking, be changing the version of the bill that has come to us from the National Assembly, giving rise to a new bill which the NCOP does not have the powers to initiate. Chairperson, and it's for this reason that I would say that this amendment is procedurally irregular. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkalipi. Any comments?
Thank you, Chair. Look, for our side, we think the views put by the Parliamentary Legal Office and the state law advisors, it's a view that we support, but we leave it to the committee to make the decision. We put the proposal in the committee, and if the committee needs deliberation, agree with the legal position put by the state law advisors and the Parliamentary Legal Office, then we'll support that. But if the committee is of the view that the rules committee is more correct than the other two, we don't have a choice. We'll take whatever the committee puts on the table, but we'll put the amendments in front of the committee, and we agree. And the amendment is not the new section that's been amended, the same section that is in front of the committee. And we think that if the committee pick up that there's a change that is needed, that could enrich the committee, the bill. And for us, we don't think that it should be wrong for the committee to make that change with the understanding that in any event, if a change is made, it will go back again to the NA for them to reconsider the issue. And yes, Chair. And in the NA, when we consulted with the chair, with the members, the view was that because we're at the end of the process when we proposed the bill, it's far better that we make this proposal in this committee, and then it will come back to that committee. It was not as if it was not that the chair was against the change that we wanted to make, except that it was at the end of that process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honorable members, can we have comments on the matter? Honorable Mama.
Thank you, Chair. For the opportunity to engage on the matter, and my entry point, Chair, will be I think the point raised around whether do we have the power to initiate the Section 75, clearly, we do not. And two, the before us is not the the proposal that is made by the department. Because my understanding is that the department is proposing us that we amend Section 51A of the Act to change the phrase national and regional to national or regional. And given the meaning that could be attached to these two words, Chairperson, I want to believe that what is proposed to us is something that was not canvassed at cabinet level. And not only at cabinet level, but also at NetLab level. And therefore, we are being asked to process a matter that procedurally is limited. And therefore, it is only fair that we stick to our line. And in sticking to our line, Chair, my proposal is let us deal with what is before us. Because if the chair wanted the amendment to be included in the bill that was adopted by the National Assembly, he could have done that so that he's then able to ensure that the very same issues now that we are conversing around the limitations imposed on us by the rules should have been dealt with. And as a result, Chair, my proposal is that let us allow the department, if they want to make an amendment, to make an additional amendment, let them follow the right route, not only in terms of the portfolio committee of the National Assembly, but also even at the cabinet level, let the cabinet make a pronouncement on this, and then the NetLab also, as part of their partners, do likewise, so that when this matter has finally been canvassed, then the portfolio committee can deal with the matter. And then that amendment be referred to us correctly. So my view is that let us not entertain it for now. Thank you,
Honorable Maima. Honorable Tiango, Honorable Boso.
Chair, I think I go along with what Honorable Moimang is saying. We must deal with what is before us, and if the department so wishes that they can bring an amendment bill at another stage that we can consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tiango. Honorable Boso.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's been summed up very well by Honorable Moyamang, and as our Parliamentary Legal Office said, and the state law advisors, one cannot initiate Section 75 amendments, so let's follow due processes and get it back to the NA, and then we can take it from there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I take it that those are the only three hands. Are there any other members who want to contribute?
True.
Yes, the Honourable Brotherton.
Yeah, just to say I concur with my colleagues, that's all.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Are there any other members? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Honorable Mushuri.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, everybody. On my side, Honorable Chairperson, I think I share the same sentiment of the other honorable members who speak before me. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, I think that is the decision of the committee that we go ahead with the bill before us. I don't know if you want to have a bite, Honorable Matebula. Okay. Now, I take it that the decision is that we continue with the bill before us from the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. In fact, it comes now from the House because it has been adopted from the NA. Then if the department would like to make an amendment, it will have to make amendment after the bill has either been adopted or rejected by the National Council of Provinces plenary session. But I think it's a matter that we still need to pursue because for us in the committee, I don't know in other committees, it's the first of its kind. Because the problem is that you know, there's this saying that lawyers have two hands. On the one hand, this is a situation. On the other hand, this is a situation. And now you get this legal view from the legal unit of parliament and the office of the chief state law advisor. And then there's another lawyer from the procedural office who has a different view. So I'm saying, whilst we agree that we continue with the bill before us, I think it's a matter that we should also perhaps bring to the attention of the presiding officer, not just on this one, but as a matter of principle, how do we deal with those kind of situations? I know from other bills where the parliament would also take some issues for legal advice, even outside parliament, to senior counsel for advice on such issues, so that we are informed legally as parliament when we're taking this decision. I know there's a remitted bill that will be at some stage come to this committee, I think on the performance protection bill, just forgotten the other bill. I know parliament had to source the legal opinion outside parliament on those particular two bills that were returned by a president. They are still with the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. They're still coming back to the NCOP once they're passed by the National Assembly. So I'm saying even with this one, we need to still pursue it, that we not continue with the bill, just for in future if we find ourselves in a similar situation. Because the other question would be, what happens if parties when we advertise this bill with that section 42, then other parties will be taking part in the public hearings themselves come with an amendment. How do we deal with that situation? So those are the matters that we need to continue to discuss. I'm ready. It because if there was one view from our legal advisors, both legal parliament, state chief law advisor, and the procedural advisor, if there was one view, then it would be fine. But now with the different views, it confuses the members of the committee. But they tend to err on the side of caution by saying, let's continue with what is before us. Whilst I agree with that, but I'm suggesting that we should also seek for legal advice, not only on this bill, but just in future if we find ourselves in that kind of situation. Thank you very much. And as I indicated, I would like to again apologize to those who came for what we initially decided with regard to the presentation on the economic development in Free State. The role of the national departments and the government entities. Thank you very much, Ms. Isaac, Mr. Sisa, and also Mr. Mkalipi, Samara. I think Samara will be continuing with us if she's fine with that. Yeah, thank you very much. We will now go back to the agenda items. Who's calling? Oh, thank you, Chair. Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. Can we then go to the agenda item? I think we need to get a presentation from the MEC of Economic Development, I think, in terms of the program.
Chairperson, the MEC is on the platform.
Oh, thank you very much. Welcome, Honorable MEC. I think I must also apologize to you. I've already apologized to the Deputy Minister that we had to start with these other issues, internal matters that relate to the bill. So we had to get a legal advice before we move forward with it. We apologize for keeping you waiting. We'll hand over to you. Let me first introduce myself. My name is Mal Dakhai, the chairperson of the Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labor. We have members of the community of all the provinces, Free State, Northern Cape. Free State is Honorable Moshodi, Northern Cape, Honorable Moemang, Mpumalanga, Honorable Boshoff, KZN, Honorable Brotherset, the Western Cape, Honorable Lont, Eastern Cape is myself, and also Honorable Ableni, Limpopo, it's Honorable Brenda Matevula, and Honorable Liliet Mamaragane. I hope I've, and Gauteng, sorry, Honorable Dango, it's Honorable Dango from Gauteng. We have decided that we normally have presentations or briefings from the departments on the annual performance plans, other programs, as well as the annual reports. But we felt that with regard to the programs that departments and entities report on to our committee, we wanted to see or hear for ourselves the footprints of those programs in the provinces, in the metros. We had started, I think 2 weeks ago, we were doing it alphabetically. We started with the Eastern Cape, where we invited the National Department, DTIC. It was represented by Honorable Deputy Minister, who was also here with us. We had the Department of Public Enterprises, represented by Minister Godan. We also have the Office of the Mayor of Buffalo City, the Eastern Cape Development Corporation. We also had a representative from PRASA. We have decided this time around, because we only starting very late, we cut out on some of the departments that we wanted and entities that we wanted to invite, because we starting very late. We're lucky when we had a meeting with the Eastern Cape, there was no plenary session, so our meeting started at 10, and then we had enough time for all the presentation. But we anticipated that it will take us long if we were to invite the same delegation or representative that were here. I know we were also from the plenary session that was dealing with the impact of the looting and destruction in the KZN and Gauteng. That's why we're only starting now. Over to you, Honorable Mohale.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Greetings to you and all the members and all other attendants to the committee. We have sent our presentation. If perhaps the secretariat could help us flight it from where we are. Thank you, Chair. Yes, there is ours. I'll just be disruptive of saying move to the next slide.
Yes, if I can also perhaps say, Honorable MEC, I saw that it's got 41 slides. I'll suggest that as you are directing the host, if perhaps you also not focus on all the 41 slides.
I will definitely do so, Chair, in the best interest of time. I will zoom directly. Even some of the slides, I will just speak to them. So that's basically how our presentation is structured with all of those. I won't repeat because we'll be dealing with each from the next one. You can go to the next slide. You can move again. So here we are just demonstrating that as a province of the Free State, our share of the national GDP is only 5%, and our highest was only in 2011. Since then, we have been stagnant at 5%, and worrying so is that in the next 2 years or so, we are projected to decline if all things stay the same. We can go to the next. And here is just a demonstration of the key sectors that constitutes the provincial economy. If you look at that one, we have consistently the community services that takes the large share. Out of that, it constitutes the government, the expenditure of government. And you look, it's followed by the finance sector, the trade, as well as the transport. But most importantly, something to take home from this slide is that if you look at the very first block, agriculture, which used to be a main contributor to the Free State economy, is getting stagnant. It's only actually only from 2024, where it is projected to increase, as well as mining. Consistently, if one will look at the graph, in 2009, mining was way around 13 to 14%. Almost for every 5 year interval, the mine is declining. Of course, due to all the closing mines. I can make an example that we had only in the Lelopotswa area around 42 mines in the past 30 years or so, when the mining was booming in the Free State. So far, we're only left with 7. And if one can move to manufacturing, it's also still slightly lower, constituting around the 10%. Hence, all the efforts that I'll be speaking to stimulate the manufacturing in the province. So in a nutshell, it's quite worrying that government, in terms of its spend and all the wages that people draw from government and the government spend in terms of infrastructure and other investment, still constitute the larger share of the Free State economy. Can move to the next. And this is just a graphical expression of that which we have spoken about. We have seen a sharp decline, if one can move to that particular slide, in 2020, where there is a downward spike, is due to COVID, where there was a drastic decline of the GDP. Throughout the years, even though our GDP was not growing so much, around 2-3, and where there was a decline, minus 0.3. So on average, we're between about minus 2 and 2 in terms of growth and the decline. But last year, we have seen a negative 6.8, of course, due to the pandemic. But we're starting to pick up again in the year 2021 because we're now at 2.8 growth of our GDP. Can move to the next. Next one. So what we have done as the province of the Free State, just to summarize this, we also have the industrial parks that are government-owned. They are located in the two municipalities, one in Malutiapofung in the Mofutsanyana district. They are wholly owned by the Free State Development Corporation. So far, all our units ranges from 50 to 499, while the others are 500 square meter and above. We have in those parks, they used in the past to be those the biggest employers, particularly on the CMT sector, which even now we still have just one employer among all of those that are in the parks, employing around 1,200 people, majority being the women. So part of that district's economic drivers are those activities that are taken there. Largely, they relate to the clothing and textile. Next one. The next park is Botshabelo Industrial Park, which also has some manufacturing activities. But as compared to the Kwakwa one, this is where we have taken a big knock. Run about 30 years back, when all these parks were all operating, or there was a good occupation, the whole or a good number of more than 90% of the population of Botshabelo as a town used to work there. In fact, the very industrial park is the one that has been the driver behind the establishment of Botshabelo as a town, because it used to be where all of the or majority of the people of Botshabelo working. Unfortunately, now this is the park is close to collapse, as there have been very few factories that are operating. But the history behind this, just want to take opportunity to contextualize it. It used to be operated by the Taiwanese citizens at the time, citizens, where there used to be very huge incentives, as the reports indicate, where there was extremely low, even the corporate taxes, people were paying next to nothing. Now, after 1994, with the rationalization of some of the laws, we have seen the exit of most of those that used to operate the FARC. However, we are very grateful that the DTIC has made some investments into this in order to revitalize the park so as to ensure that it can assist us to attract more investment. We have one of the biggest projects, which we call a smelter project, to the value of around 300 million. We had to move the project from Botshabelo Industrial Park to the adjacent one in Tabantsho, about 10 kilometers. Precisely because of the energy issues, because the park did not or currently does not have that amount of power which is needed. But that big project of smelter would have been a game changer to the economy of Botshabelo and to the park in general. However, that could still be achieved, even though it's no more directly in the park, but just in another park adjacent to this one. Next slide. And we also under the property portfolio under the FDC, we offer various facilities, not only to the offices, but also to the industrial buildings. The FDC also offers, also owns some shopping centers in Kwakwa and in Tabantsho, even though the one in Tabantsho is not fully occupied. Part of the incentives that we are doing through the FDC is to give the rental holidays to the investors of up to 6 months. Some they even exceed that. And we also encourage transformation in the manufacturing sector by affording those that are 50% plus black ownership some of the discounts on the normal rates, particularly those that also have the young people below the age of 35 and those with disability. This is just one of the ways to encourage those that are in their paths to give transformation opportunities within their business. Can move the next one. We also have the only special economic zone in the province, which we call Maludiapofung Special Economic Zone. The zone, it seeks to provide also opportunities for the local businesses and the skills transfer. And it's also located strategically in the SIP2 because Maludiapofung Special Economic Zone is located right in the middle of N3 National Road. In Harrismith, and it is mainly designed, or the priority sectors for the zone are automotive, agro-processing, logistics, ICT, pharmaceuticals, and the general processing. Because of the location, the zone becomes very ideal for the logistics, because most of the trucks and all other transports, they pass through Harrismith on the N3. Between Johannesburg and Devon. So the zone becomes very strategic for that purpose. The next one. This is an example of those that are there. We have an abattoir, which is a Danish-based or Danish-owned abattoir. They are in the park. They started in 2017 with a 25-year lease that has been entered with the zone, and they have invested 60 million thus far, and 34 people are already employed. According to their plan, they will expand their investment up to 450 million with an additional 75 permanent work opportunities to be created. The next. This is how it looks, the abattoir in the zone. Let's move the next one. We also have number one hair industries. These ones that are doing synthetic hair. We normally call them weaves in terms of the easier language that is understood. They've invested 114 million. There's a partnership between the South African and Korean investor. They have signed a 10-year lease, and thus far, they have employed initially 22. According to their plans, they'll go up to 140. Let's move to the next one. And Interbazo Agri is a new investor who have just invested around 78 million, which is a combination of their own funding and the other funding from elsewhere. They are on a 50-year lease agreement. It's an agri-hub, and officially they started operating last year. It was one of our flagships, and 34 people are implemented. There is the pictures as well. Can move to the next one. And that's also a chemical factory that is there, which is South African owned. Which is a starch and chemical blending facility. They have employed 22 people, and according to their plans, they will go up to 126. They have invested 383 million in the park. Can move to the next one. So that's basically those applications that are already approved by the SEZ board, which will be submitted further to DTI for funding within the SEZ program. The estimated value is around 3.6 billion. And if that all goes through, we will have 218 jobs that will be created permanently. We can move to the next one. So what we have also done as a province, we have focused more on creating sustainable SMMEs. And we have now Botshabelo ICT Hub is complete. We will just finalize with the DTIC ministry on the day to formally launch it. It is the high-tech facility, which will assist the SMMEs, because the entire connectivity is there. Everything is digital. It will also assist them to run their processes efficiently but promote innovation. It was funded by DTIC. We have also contributed some together with the municipality of Mangaung to ensure that the project becomes a success. Fixback and Mangaung, we also have what we call SMME hubs. This one are what we normally call the container parks, to provide SMEs with the strategic facilities where they can run their businesses. And I can indicate that the one of Mangaung has been in operation for about 3 years now. There's a lot of innovation that comes out of that, because most of the SMEs that are there, they have now graduated, they are ready to enter the mainstream economy. I can cite an example of the guys that are doing jewelry, who are partnering with most of their clients at this major stores. One who's doing the tracking for the vehicles is also there. I'll not mention so many for the sake of time. But we also had the Rented X program, which was meant, as the name indicates, that our SMEs shouldn't run their businesses from their handbags or from the boots of their vehicles, but it was trying to formalize them, because these facilities, if they were to go and get them from the private sector, it's quite expensive. They pay up to 10,000 or 20,000 to just rent a desk or to go for a meeting facility to rent a boardroom and so on. So that facility was seeking to say, let's support them so that they are starting to have a culture of being formalized. Let's move to the next one. We have also a program around localization and reindustrialization. In summary, Chair, this slide, what we are saying is that as a province of the Free State, we have taken a conscious decision that we need to reindustrialize the economy of the Free State, because for a very long time that the economy was reliant on mining and agriculture, mining of which has been declining, and at the same trend, very soon will be all the mines in the province would be closed, other than the new one of Helium that has just been established. So we had to find alternative to the new economic driver of the Free State. And we have taken a decision as part of our strategy that given the location of the Free State, it is more of an advantage for us if we could enter the manufacturing space, because most of the commodities moves from all the points of the country pass through the Free State, and we're not optimizing on it. Then we took a decision that will reindustrialize the province, where we intend that all manufacturing of key commodities will take place there. But there's also a reality here where we say to start a manufacturing process is quite capital intensive. And with all the market realities, many businesses, especially that are black owned, they collapse due to a lack of the market. Now, what we then said is that we would then use the government spend or the procurement budget of government to stimulate that. How that would work is that we will encourage or incentivize those that are engaged in the manufacturing activities in the province to be the ones that get preference for procurement. But most importantly, we are working on a document which is at an advanced stage of being approved, where we would say for all the commodities consumed through the public pairs in the Free State, there must only be those that are manufactured here. So irrespective of whoever who will be awarded the contract, that particular person must source that particular product from the province of the Free State. So in that way, and immediately after we have started to announce those intentions late last year, we have seen an influx of number of manufacturers demonstrating interest to come and set up the manufacturing activities in the province. So that is basically our strategy to localize and ensure that there's manufacturing in the province, with an understanding that the secondary industry is actually the reliable driver of any economic development because of all the other down and upward streams that will flow from that. So we're working with the Treasury for that particular framework. To an extent that this will be going towards the end, this matter is also elevated to the level of the provincial legislation. We can push through. Next slide. Yeah, this is basically what we have also done. It was just speaking to the point that I have just made. So what we have done as a province, our economic strategy, we call it value chain economic transformation model, because in terms of this model, that's basically what we respond directly to our economic realities. We said our two main objectives as the province, which is to transform the economy, but also to ensure growth. We said the two must go hand in hand, because we would not want to have a growth which is not transformed. At the same time, we don't want transformation without the value, where there is no growth. So why we have started as a department, we have started with development of the sector plans for all the economic sectors. And out of that, we have identified opportunities, but also identified what are the ownership patterns in this particular sector and what are the opportunities. And all the other support programs are now packaged in line with all of that analysis to ensure that if one may make an example, if we take on the agricultural sector, we say we'll only incentivize as a province of the Free State people that are engaged on all of those commodities that will help us to transform a particular value chain of a commodity. So the financial assistance that we render, it has to speak to that, like agro-processing, because as we speak, most of the Free State agricultural products are still processed elsewhere. Now, in terms of this model that we are bringing, we say all the support programs and support services will then need to respond directly. So all of those people that will be in that one support for businesses, they must be either in the agricultural space, do the agro-processing, do mechanization, and all the other specialty areas which they want, as opposed to just support people to just plant and live. And so is the issue with all the other commodities. But we have also tightened our working relations with the private sector. For one of the reasons is to ensure that there is a market access, because most of the Black-owned businesses, they collapse because of the monopolies that are in the mainstream economy. Very rare opportunities that they will find. So as a province, we have designed a program where we engage all the big corporates on a daily basis to say, we know you spend this much on your procurement. We know this is how much you spend on the enterprise development and so on. But let's ensure that you give our people. I can cite an example with the conveyance. We have approached the financial institutions to say, your panels of conveyances are still lily white. There are no, or there are very few Black-owned firms. And we don't want, when you speak of transformation, you only give the cleaning service, catering, and so on. We want the core of your business. I just started that as an example. There are many that you identified in various sectors, which consciously we're engaging them on a routine basis so as to ensure that this is a reality. We can go to the next slide. So that's basically that which I have spoken about. You can pass. So those are basically the sector plans that the province has developed. You can move to the next one. What we're basically saying here is that our value chain transformation model is based on the Cabinet Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan. So this is basically how, as a province, we are responding and complementing and how to implement the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan adopted by the Cabinet. So as a province of the Free State, we have taken it and localized it on key of the issues, and at the center of it is localization and reindustrialization, because the ERRP, in the main, it's saying one of the key pillars is the government investment into the infrastructure. Through infrastructure, we will be able to stimulate the economy of the country. Now, with at the level of the province, we said the $4 billion that we're using in the infrastructure, we must ensure that when we follow the entire, all the cents that have been spent, the last cent must still remain in the province, hence the entire exercise of localization, because if all the inputs to the infrastructure projects, being cement, bricks, and all of those, and all the other inputs could be manufactured in the province, that will assist. And we believe that in that way, it will give a true meaning to the spirit and the objectives of the ERRP. Can move to the next one. Then under enterprise support, here we're just indicating that we have had the three main programs as the province. That's a support service to all of these programs that I've indicated. One was the industrialization, which we have launched this year, which was meant or was intended for those that are large businesses. But we also said the emerging ones needs to be supported, the minimum ones, where we said we will measure that in terms of minimum of 12 employees. And the informal one. Now, under the informal one, what we are trying to do, unlike in the past, we said we would want to ensure that even the smallest of those manufacturers, we start to note the sense of being in the mainstream economy. Part of what we have done, some of those factories that are there, we have tried to partition them so that even if a person just needs about 50 square for her operation, can still be there, as opposed to them operating from the backyard. So those are the priority sectors in terms of those. And thus far, we have approved 60 of those applications. And what we do out of that approvals, we give the space for free. We pay over the rental money to the FDC, and we also assist them with the startups of the machinery. The next one. We have also had some retail initiatives as a province for those that are in the trade. And what we have said is that we will have a combination of those that will run their own products, as well as those that will want to take advantage of some of the big brands. So we have had a partnership with Pick and Pay, where they will roll out the stores in the township. Many South Africans were complaining that it seems that these big retailers are taking our traditional businesses, because you find the shops all over competing amongst themselves at our market. So, but as a province, we said, we have engaged them and said, look, if there are opportunities there that we can help our people to be formalized at the same time, let's talk. And they came, they responded positively, Pick and Pay being one of them that we have discussed. They are in the process of setting up the stores for our people. So next time you're in the township and you see these big brands, at least we'd know that these are the stores that are owned by our people. Because we, at the same time, we don't want our people to lose the benefits of associating with the big brands for market purposes. Yet at the same time, we also encourage them to have their own brands, which we also support. The same goes with the Dunlop. There is that program as well, where those that are operating alongside the roads, we said, let's formalize you, have a proper structure, you can have a proper accreditation so that you can tap to other markets, so that you are not only operating as an informal forever. We also work with the NYDA in some of these programs. What we are at an advanced stage with is the discussions with the government garage, so as to give the markets to all of these that are beneficiaries, particularly on the tire sector. Can move to the next one. We also have the supplier program, where we encourage all our SMMEs that we have worked with, because our understanding is that a person must not be a permanent SMME. Being a small business is just the first step to come and enter the mainstream economy. Our philosophy is that all small businesses at some stage must grow and enter the mainstream. So what we have done, we are working with, again, Pick and Pay in this regard, where we have an agreement in certain areas that on their shelves, certain amount of their goods, so far we are at the 30% in some towns, to say the minimum of 30% of their goods must be from the SMMEs. At the same time, there's an issue of accreditation. We are paying and we are working with the SABS for accreditation purposes. So all of those that come and say, I have a product that I have done, but you know, for it to be in the shelves, there are strict requirements and it's quite expensive to accredit a program. So we have made a dedicated program to ensure that all of those projects go through various stages. I can make an example in that regard. There is a business owned by young ladies who are doing the bricks out of recycled plastics. They are now working with the cash build. Their product has been is on their shelves. But that was a very long journey, because it took them about 3 to 4 months for their businesses, because they wanted the product to be accredited. We went through that entire process with them. We paid for the SABS course, expensive as they are. And now they have their own brand and their own innovate, a break out of their own innovations through our help. We are doing the same with all the other projects. The only limitation is the money, because we don't have money for almost everything. But that's that which we are doing as the province. Those were just examples. The next one. I have spoken about the access to market program, but just in addition, we are also taking our businesses in all of this international and national marketplaces so as to ensure that they demonstrate their projects. But something that we further do, we are involved in terms of the facilitation, in terms of vetting of the contracts, providing due diligence and so on at our cost as the department. Next one. Under the business support, I can just summarize that, Chair, that we have established this program late last year, where we say, out of the realization that majority of our businesses, they collapse, not because of finance, but due to the basics of business administration. Now, our business support has now been focusing largely on the management of the business. We ensure that we spend money on their behalf on the during the initial stages for those basics such as bookkeeping, legal services, marketing, business plan, and so on. So as to ensure that at least they start to have a sense of how to run a business on their own under the mentorship. And it's not only a once-off in form of a workshop. That program started last year. Those that are on the first group, they will be under the program for at least a period of 3 years. And thereafter, you put the others, because we want the issue of business supposed to be a reality. We don't want, we're not just celebrating that we have registered new businesses, we have funded the businesses, but at the end of the day, we can't see the outcome of that, or the only outcome that we see is a high failure rate. We really focus now on the success rate of the small businesses. Next slide. And I think this is the last one, under business regulation. I'll just summarize this slide, Chair, by saying, as a province of the Free State, we have realized that some of the interventions that we made need some level of enforcement. So as a department, we, on the 24th, which is tomorrow, the Executive Council, we hope that it will approve the draft Free State Local Economic Development and Transformation Bill so that we can take it for legislature for processing. But in essence, what it says, this bill, it seeks to legislate the issue of local sourcing. If you go to the Treasury regulations in terms of the local content, it defines local content as the country. And one could understand, because where the Treasury is, they are trying to ensure everything is in the country. But we're out of realization as the Free State competes with about all the other eight provinces. So we further define a locality in terms of the province. So the initiative that we spoke about of ensuring that the procurement spend of government is used to stimulate the economy, this bill will now give it a legislative effect so as to assist even other supply chain processes to be compliant. Unlike if we were to do it now, because there were a number of discussions about how do we enforce that policy posture that the provincial executive has taken. That's number one. But two, it seeks to regulate the issue around the business forum or the business voice. I'll just use the forum as an example. So it seeks to say, let's have the voluntary business bodies at the level of the districts as well as the province. Because now with the issue of the district development model, part of the activities or part of the posture of the democratic government is all about public participation and involvement of community. But we have realized that we have become the victims of our own initiatives and success, because the issue of the business voice has been abused. You wake up one day, two people call themselves a business forum, they disrupt. You come with a policy document, you want the voice of the business, a group of friends arrive and say, no, where did it? So it becomes very difficult to know who government must really be speaking to. So at the level of the province, we said, let's have a proper structure that will know when you speak with the business, if the business sector, this is the structure that you're speaking of, which will ensure that it is well represented, the same at the level of the district. The third one is to also close the gaps which are there in the Businesses Act, because the issue of business regulations in terms of the Businesses Act is a responsibility of municipalities, of course, through their bylaws. But we have realized that there is no uniformity insofar as the processes that are followed in terms of permit system, licensing businesses, what are the requirements and so on. Because unfortunately, our municipalities are less capacitated, not only at the level of enforcement, but in terms of the systems. So in terms of this bill, we'll give a provincial government a power to develop norms and standards, provided they are not in contrast to those that are promulgated in terms of that act. And I'm very glad, Chair, that in our engagement with the DSBD this year with the new minister, when we raised these issues, we're informed that it appears that the Businesses Act has now moved to DSBD, and there was already some commitment on the side of the DSBD to also start to work on those loopholes. So if all goes well, we may find some of the issues relating to that being withdrawn if the Businesses Act is able to address that accordingly. So that's basically what the issues that the this bill of ours, that the draft documents, not yet a bill, that we seek to do so as to ensure that we move. But I can indicate, Chair, that our initiatives so far in assisting municipalities with the norms and standards, despite that there's not been legislation, we are seeing them starting to bear fruit, because that which we wanted to be enforced by this envisaged act, on the understanding level, we've already developed them, we've already given to them as to, if you say someone must apply for a business license, what are the requirements, what is the specimen form, what are the things that must be submitted, particularly to cap all of these other illegal participants, because part of the requirements, if I may just give a hint to the chair, is that we require on the form that people must be compliant in all aspects, be registered accordingly, which includes registration with the revenue services, which also say you must be up to date with your returns as well, with the revenue services, with the CIPC, and also the proof of banking, because we know some of these other businesses that are operated mostly illegally, some of those proceeds are used for illicit activities, for tax evasion. Money is not banked, it's in that, which really makes it the problem, because we have realized, Chair, that the biggest problem of these other guys that are not illegal, they are posing unfair competition to the locals that are compliant, or to anyone who is compliant. I'm trying to be very careful on the choice of words, so that we are not seen to be targeting particular individuals. Because those that are compliant, they pay a lot of money for compliance, for their accountants and so on, their money gets taxed and so on. These ones that are outside the banking system, they don't have a cost for compliance, if one may do so. They have nothing to lose, they're not accredited by anyone. They have no fear of losing any license because they anyway don't have it. Now, with all of this, we're trying to protect those that are compliant to the law. And hopefully that if all this is informed, no one will be issued with a business permit or license if he or she is not compliant. So, but we are saying we are trying to then give this a legislative effect so that it can be enforceable. Because currently, even where we want to enforce, the bylaws are still not updated. They are still very vague in order to cap some of these things. We can move to the next one. So this is basically the specimen form which I'm referring around. If a person is not a citizen, must be lawful in the country. The proof of address, SARS, CIPC. If a person is operating a business from a residential area, it happens in the township, there must be a zoning certificate accordingly, or a permission from the municipality. Those that are in the hospitality or food, there must be a certificate of hospitality by the relevant authorities. Can move to the next one. So under tourism, what we were simply saying here is that we are having many collaborators, mostly with those in the private sector. We are working closely with some of the major institutions of higher learning, their hospitality schools, to train and develop the youngsters in that regard. We are also conducting feasibility study on the development of culinary route within the province. But again, we have just finalized a tourism master plan for the province. But importantly, we have embarked on the Tour Free State campaign, where we say, let's have the Free State has been the one that support the tourism in the Free State, instead of relying on the other people from outside. COVID has taught us that reliance on the international market is quite risky, because when the borders were closed, it was quite difficult. The sector was a major, was highly negatively affected by that. So we're saying we're conscientizing the Free Staters, and part of what we have had, Chair, so far is the ecotourism. We have launched it last weekend, Chair, if I may just summarize on that one. We are taking all the nature reserves and start to have fun activities in there. There are festivals, there are picnics, and the target there is the target market are those that ordinarily never had opportunities for the game drives and so on. As a department, we are driving it so that we make it cost effective. We have started in August, where we are taking the schools, we keep the youngsters for the weekend to go and experience the wildlife experience them, so that they don't have a sense that this is only a market for those that are wealthy, but they should also have that conscious that they are also able to access. Can you go to the next one? We, as a province, in line with that, we also hosted World Tourism Day. And all of these activities that I'm referring, we had an opportunity to showcase them and inform the Free Staters. We're in the process, again, to optimize this tourist attraction, the resorts and reserves. We're optimizing them to be more IT compliant, so that people can also find it easy to book at all these resorts. We have 5 routes as a province, tourism routes, which are mainly marketed by our entity, Free State Gambling Liquor and Tourism Authority. And part of the programs that we run in those are what we call Kasi Tourism, Adventure, Heritage, and Cultural Tourism, to promote some of these key activities. Annually, we do have a cultural tourism race, where the race only focuses on this historical activities in Bloemfontein, from Naval Hill to all of those heritage sites, to showcase the Heritage Street, which is President Brandt, where there is an appeal court, the legislature, the courts, and all of those. Those are the routes, so as to raise consciousness amongst our people about what we have as a province. But like I said, the main focus is on the Free Staters and those that ordinarily did not associate with this type of lifestyle, and we make it affordable for them. The next one, we should be done now. Oh, the challenges. As I indicated, there was an issue around the policy, and there was still a problem about the strategic coordination of different interventions, of the interventions by different spheres of government. But thanks to the DDM, because some of the issues then get to be resolved, we are able to be under one roof. We are saying that some of the key national programs, which really are very difficult for the province, because if you take Black Industrial Program incentives, there the requirements is really for those big businesses, which you will find in the larger provinces, which will, it will be very difficult for us to access in the province. Our black industrialists that we are trying to build are not to that size that we the requirements are required. But again, the major elephant in the room is the issue of revenue. As a province of the Free State, we rely 100% on the fiscus. Our relying on the fiscus is that we are also competing with the social sector, because as a province of the Free State, where there are no major economic activities, most of the people, as the slide has shown at the beginning, most of the people are relying on government intervention. So, and there's nothing that we can do. Social sector is always prioritized. Issues like children have to eat at school. We can't say, let's postpone the billion that is given to education for kids to school. We'll put it into the economy. It will mature over 5 or 10 years with all the interventions. So that's the biggest challenge for the province. It's quite difficult. We hope that, and again, in the economic sector, this is a sector where, unlike in all other sectors or clusters of government, where there are no grants. In other departments, human settlements, they rely on the grant from national HSDG. The roles, they've got their own grants, PRMG. Sports, they've got their own grants. This is the only sector where there are no grants that flow directly to provinces, where the provinces could make some intervention. They are managed directly at national, even those incentives. And unfortunately, Free State has always been one of those provinces where we have not received a sufficient support in that regard. A typical example will be the COVID reliefs and all of those from last year. Free State had the lowest numbers. So, but we believe that if all other issues could be decentralized, perhaps there could be something that can work for the province. So the last one about regulatory environment, we have tried to do something about that with that envisaged legislation that I have spoken about. The next one. So that's basically, Chair, what we are really trying to do for our small businesses as a province of the Free State. And that brings us to the conclusion. Thank you very much, Chair, for the time you have afforded us. Our apology, I think we went slightly above your time. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable MEC Mohale, for the presentation on the economic development in the province of the Free State. We will have, Honorable Members, now two presentations, and then after that we have questions and answers session, and then after that we ask then the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition to make an input, and then followed by a Transnet. I've observed that the DG of Public Enterprise is also joining us. Acknowledge DG. Can we then take a... Let me just go to my program. This Free State Development Corporation. CEO, Mr. T. Taboli Bello. I hope I'm pronouncing this name correctly. Taboli Bello. Can I just give you, both of you, to share the 30 minutes? It's almost 5:30. Both of you then should be done by 6. Mr. Yes. Uele, then followed by Mr. I hope in Afrikaans, More. Is it correct here? Mr. Mo?
Chairperson is Mr. More.
Oh, More. Sorry.
But this is always confusing, so I've accepted that.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Okay, let's start then with Mr. Livelo. You'll correct me, Mr. Livelo, if I'm pronouncing the correctly.
Fine, thank you very much. if I could just ask you to be assisted with the presentation for flighting, I would really
okay.
Thank you, sir. And honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you very briefly, because my presentation is very much brief, more because the MEC of Distea, who is my shareholder, has pretty much covered a lot of who we are and the activities that we engage in. So I will quickly just run through the presentation. If I could maybe go to the next two slides, please. The next one. And the next one. Thank you. The next one. Thank you very much. Just who is the IDC? Who is the FDC? We play three developmental roles. We basically, under development, we initiate empowerment projects that will benefit the Free State. We also assist Free State-based SMEs in financial distress. And on the financial side, we also provide funding to SMEs and micro enterprises. We also initiate empowerment projects that will benefit the Free State. This is where maybe some studies are required. We would fund some of those studies, upfront studies, for the purpose of those projects. And under the promotional of investment side, we identify, analyze, and package and publicize investment opportunities in the Free State. We also promote and develop SMEs within the Free State. Next slide, please. Just who is the FDC in terms of the structure and the governance? There are two oversight bodies over the Free State, both for financial and non-financial. And PROPEC basically looks after the financial responsibilities of the FDC. We account to them as an arm of government. And the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Rural Development, Economic, Small Business Development, and Sports, Arts, and Culture, it looks after, we account to them on the non-financial responsibilities. Now, who are we? We are a creature of statute. We were formed, established in terms of the FDC Act, number 6 of 1995. We are a Schedule 3D in terms of PFMA. That means we run purely on business principles, like any commercial business, albeit with small assistance from the fiscus. We do have a board, which accounts to the MEC of the state. So the MEC is a sole shareholder. The MEC, Makalo, who is just presented here, we basically report to his department. The next slide, please. Okay, I'll be very brief on this one. What do we do developmentally? We own a portfolio of properties that we rent very cheaply to industrialists who do manufacturing. And we've got three industrial parks, one in Butabelo, in Kwakwa, and one in Tabanchu. And we also have a subsidiary that has the SEZ in Malutia Kufung in Harrismith. We also engage a little bit in trading in terms of utilities. We used to sell electricity from municipalities and Centlec, but we've seen moved out of that business. We're only trading water. And we also offer support services of financial and non-financial. We undertake investment promotions and facilitation at our own costs. We also provide some funding to SMEs who otherwise would not be able to function because it's very difficult for them to get funding from the banks. A lot of what we do is on the back of government orders for various tenders that the provincial department issues to a lot of the SMEs who otherwise would not have working capital to execute those orders. The next slide, please. Thank you very much. We have three industrial parks. There's one, the MEC has covered, there was one in Harrismith, Malutia Kufung, and then we've got this industrial park that consists of between 50 and 500 square meters that's small, and anything above 500 square meters, we say that is large. And the numbers are as indicated in the MEC's presentation. As I said, Puteli Chaba is in Kwakwa. and Botshabelo is 60 k's from Bloemfontein on the east towards Lesotho. Who are tenants in these parks? It's various people in various sectors: textile, plastics, polypropylene bags, poultry. One of the biggest chicken suppliers for various retailers in the province is in our industrial park in Botshabelo. Food and snacks, packaging. We also have tenants that manufacture apparel and stoves, hot plates, plastic packaging, and one that does electrical transformers. They manufacture electrical transformers. Into the next slide, please. And we also appreciate very much the support we've been getting from the DGIC. As it we appreciated, we inherited these industrial parks from the former apartheid administration. And unfortunately, for many, many years, there was very little investment in those parks. So we have started a revitalization program assisted by the DTIC through its implementing agent, being the DBSA. I think the MAC has tasked on this. Just a scope on phase one of the tabelo, security fencing was provided, high mast lights, roller shutter doors, boom gates. That project was around 22 million. Phase two, CCTV cameras. There's a beautiful ICT hub that is there, MAC tasked on it, refurbishing of a lot of roofs. There's also 57 factories that were refurbished, electrical upgrades, and also the facade at entrance. That project is 40.4 million, wholly funded by the DGIC, and we thank them for that. There's still some challenges, but we will get to those. Next slide, please. And Puja Ditaba phase one is completed. This was at 32.3 million. The scope there was installation of perimeter fencing, security CCTV cameras, installation of gates, and the guard rooms. Phase two, DBSA was with us last week on, I can't remember what day it was, sometime last week. The application for phase two has already been submitted to DTIC, assisted by the DBSA. It's to address compliance for 16 factories, and that scope includes roofing, plumbing, electrical upgrades, and three substations that needs to be upgraded. And we also have a project of the MAP TVET College, in partnership with CEDA, where we are housing the digital hub in the factory that has been provided by the FTC. And next slide. Also of very importance, phase one of infrastructure at Malutiapofung. This was a funding agreement for infrastructure for 244 million. To provide phase one of the infrastructure at Malutiapofung. This project is nearing completion. There's a couple of not necessarily completion issues that we're busy with the contractor on site, but a lot of the work has been completed. I won't go into too much details around what the issues are, but phase two, I think once we sort out our governance issues at Malutiapofung with SEZ and FDC, phase two and three can continue. Such that we have reached the desired end state of that SEZ in Harrismith. The next slide. What incentives do we provide to people in our industrial parks? As I said, we facilitate the commercial and industrial activity, while we also assist new investors who are seeking suitable rental space for manufacturing in our factories. So we give them subsidized rental rates, and we give them rental holidays. I think MEC spoke at length around the structure of our rentals and incentives and the rental holidays that we give. Also, what we began to do is that instead of waiting for the DTIC to assist us, we enter into partnerships with tenants with money who are looking to go into the properties that are deliberate. And then they will put up their own money to upgrade the factories such that we have been helped. We can do away with the holding costs, and we amortize that capital expenditure over the lease term. So it's picking up speed, and I think with those symbiotic relationships, we'll be able to do a lot more than we have been in the past. Other strategies, objectives that we're trying to achieve is that through increasing occupancy and also optimizing and commercializing some of the rental, we'll be able to get a little bit more money than we are. Also, as I said, we increase a number of private sector partnerships. to utilize the vacant or vandalized properties with the main aim of facilitating job creation. Because we know that the private sector has the money and they've got the know-how. So, and our processes are very long in terms of trying to do some of these things. So if we have private sector doing them, it's easier for them to put their money into our properties and work with us. The next slide, please. Also the initiatives, as I said, we're revitalizing the industrial parks. We also want to revive the agri-parks partnership with the Department of Rural Development in Putedichaba, Tiame, and Tabanchu. The ICT hub in partnership with Apofun, TVET, and SEDA. That is in progress. I think it's almost complete. We're also looking at collective training for industrial sectors in the park on textile manufacturing skills. And there's also venturing into student accommodation in Putedichaba, where it's convenient and it's closer to the universities and the TVET colleges to convert some of those structures that we have, not necessarily factories, but offices in the industrial park into student accommodation. And also we have a lot of shopping centers that we have, which are very old. And we're piloting one with a partner in Bolata, where we're saying, take over the entire site and on a head lease, and then put the money upgraded on a longer lease and package it. Just that we, the impact of it is that we get an investment and we also get a lot more rental than we are at the moment. We also, as I said, we a partnership with Maduti TVET College in SEDA in establishing a center for entrepreneurial rapid incubator in Putedichaba in the park. And we have a challenge with the roads, particularly in Putedichaba. And here, in this case, we are speaking to DDBSA to scope the project with a view to assisting us with an application to look at how if a DTRC could fund the upgrade of the road reticulation in Butabed and Putedichaba. So that's going relatively well, such that the money is not returned to the fiscus, at least let's find the use for it. The next slide, please. I think just to highlight a couple of major projects that we're busy with, there's a steel smelter that the MEC has spoken about that was relocated from Butabed, it's now in Tabanchu. It's in construction phase. And in the end, it will employ in excess of 2,000 people. And then there's the N8 Mahungra node project, which is in planning stage. And I think in this case, we'd like to have a discussion with Transnet, who I believe are on the call. And that is, there's a potential tenant who would like to put up a wagon manufacturing facility in one of the disused factories in the rail engineering site. So they will do the funding. They've got an overseas partner. There's a demand for wagons, and I think it's there might be need for transport, but they've got other clients. And if we can partner in some way in working together with Transnet, such that their disused factories in that node are upgraded for manufacturing of wagons, I think that would be fantastic. That will employ additional 2,500 people, and we all know 2,500 people in the economy like this one here, what it would do to the economy of the metro, what it would do to that node, I think the benefits are quite big. And also we were thinking about the Bloom Dastria that Mangaung owns in partnership with CUT. CUT has all these technologies that it developed over many, many years, but none of those things have ever been commercialized. And we're thinking in partnership with them, maybe with DBSA and DTIC, we start looking at how maybe in the Bloom Dastria could be revitalized with a view to making it a tech hub for various technologies that CUT has developed. Not only CUT, but also University of Free State, UOFS, such that that becomes a commercializing of a lot of things that they do. For example, manufacturing of, they've got very good technology to manufacture wheelchairs. I mean, we're importing a lot of our wheelchairs and they can be manufactured here. They are being manufactured in CUT, but on a sample basis. That technology and the rights have already been registered. The machines are there and the guys can actually make these things. It's just one example of things that can happen in that tech hub that we're thinking of. If you can go to the next slide, please. Just the performance report. This is just to give a sense of how big the FDC is. It's not big, but we've got about, in Botswana, 144 factories, and 103 are occupied. So occupancy is 72%. So the balance of 41 factories are available, and they need to be upgraded. And there's a growing pipeline of tenants who would like to go into those factories that are operating from there. And the value chain transformation that the MEC spoke about is an elegant way of localizing, such that as people are procuring from, or as the department is, will be procuring locally, we can put those people in those factories to manufacture and create jobs there. And this morning we had a very good session with the IDC, NEF, the Land Bank and others, where we started a forum where we'll be working together to say, let's work together, because in the end, we are all part of a unitary state. And if we can work together on the funding side and on the, we own the properties, we can go a long way, because the end goal is stimulate the economy and create jobs and give our people the dignity of a job. In Tabanchu, there's about 8 factories and 4 are occupied. But this number will change drastically since we moved the smelter to Tabanchu. So the numbers there of 119, in fact, currently, there's already 60 more jobs during construction of the smelter. And as I said, once it's fully operational in about a year's time, there'll be 2,000 people on that side. And in Puteri-Chaba, 8,500 jobs, direct jobs that are there, and the occupancy is only 60%. The challenge is the water and electricity. And once we overcome the challenge, which we currently, we together with ESCOM, and the municipality, we're exploring the possibility of direct supply of electricity to our factories, since there's 2 feeder lines into Puteri-Chaba, and that one is exclusively for the factories, and that it will serve 2 purposes. And I think buying directly from ESCOM will be cheaper for industrialists. It will, however, maybe harm the revenue of the in the short term of the metro. But however, if more people are employed in the metro, that means more will be able to pay for services. So I think we need to think about it that way, that we can have both. We can have both industrial boom in that node. We can also have more jobs, maybe even double the 8,500 to 17,000 jobs. So that is the discussion that we have in, with the municipality, and I think it will come to fruition. And in Harrismith, in Tiame, as we have explained, that the SEZ is taking off, and with the second phase and third phase of infrastructure, there will be more factories that will pop up in that node. And I think there's with the change in the governance model that we the MEC is spearheading, there's going to be a change in that, and this thing is going to turn around quite big. So currently we have about 17,000, it's about 16,000 jobs that we're facilitating. These are direct jobs currently at the moment, and we think that in the medium term of 2.5 years, we should be at about 25 and working towards 30,000 direct jobs. And these are sorely needed in the Free State. And we think that there's probably a lot more that we can do. And we'll be looking at more opportunities in facilitating more job creation in the province. Thank you, Chair. I think I will leave it there. That will be my last slide. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So you've taken 4 minutes of the acting municipal manager of Mangaung. You'll discuss it when we are together. Over to you, Mr. Silo Moore.
Afternoon, Chairperson.
For 11 minutes.
Afternoon, honorable members, MEC present here. I wanted to say that he stole your minutes, not mine.
Oh, I said you must do everything up until
11 minutes is too little, but I will try and run. I did send the presentation. If the secretariat can kindly please flash it for us. Thank you very much. I will run with some of the slides because of the time factor. We requested to make a presentation on the economic situation of Mangaung, but we also tried to make presentation to cover also the broader performance of the city. Next slide, please. Okay, this is a summary of Mangaung in numbers. We've got an estimated 861 people. We have a very small population for a metro, but geographically, we remain a very big town or a city with about 7 towns constituting Mangaung. We've got about 25.3% with regard to unemployment. Community service is the main driver of the economy for the metro. We can go into the next. Okay, before we go there, just in summary, we are also busy with what we term the airport development note, as well as what the MEC touched on, the Tawanshu Agri Hub. Can go to the next slide, please. Okay, in terms of our socio-economic intelligence, we are all affected by these factors: ailing economy, load shedding, credit rating downgrades, service delivery protests, low consumer and business confidence aggravated by COVID-19. Just to reflect on the COVID-19 element, many of the businesses are facing closure, particularly in the cities, and them facing the closures, it forces us also to be a bit lenient with regard to collecting revenue from the businesses, which to a large extent also affect our own revenue performance. So COVID-19 has been massive on us. So we are navigating this uncertainty through evidence-based planning to inform integrated planning and budgeting, fair, equitable, and sustainable distribution of our limited financial resources, while at the same time also supporting good governance as well as financial stability. You can go to the next slide. I think we can skip this one. It talks mostly to the global as well as national and provincial outlook. Okay, the drivers of growth remain the tertiary sector at 83.2%, community services at 33%, trade at 16.2%, and finance at 15.1%. Next slide, please. Okay, Mangaung is the largest contributor to the GDP of the province, and is also one of the most diversified. Between 2008 and 2017, Mangaung had an average of 2.3% economic growth rate. Essentially, we have not really had an economic growth rate, I might just say, Chair, because mainly we have been driven by the tertiary sector, and in particular, the community sector. Next slide, please. Okay, these are broad statistics in terms of the population, comparing Mangaung and Free State. We can skip this slide. I think it talks mostly to the issues of employment and unemployment that are reflected in the first slide. The community services contributing 33% in terms of sectoral contribution to GVA. In 2018, the finance sector at 21%, transport sector at 13%, trade at 17%, construction 3%, electricity 3%. We have a very low manufacturing capacity as the metro, almost non-existent. Mining 1% is just a small sand mining in one of our newly incorporated areas. Agriculture is 2%. Can go to the next slide. Okay, this is where I thought I should put more focus on, Chairperson. You know that our municipality has a very fragile financial health. We are also under Section 139(5)(a) and (c), provincial intervention since January 2020. It has been approved, a mandatory financial recovery plan And I can say that the city is still not in a position to afford borrowing for CAPEX funding. And that's where we really have a big need as the city. We've had an unqualified audit outcome for 2019-20 financial year after 3 consecutive years of a qualified report. We have tried to improve in terms of our budget implementation process for 2021-22, as well as the 21-22 MTREF budget, which was approved by Council on the 31st of May 2021. It should be noted here that through the provincial intervention, we are also trying to improve our own systems. We are presenting a federal budget. We are trying by all means also to cleanse our books. But I must say, as the next slides will show, getting systems right and getting books right does not always translate into effective service delivery. We can go to the next slide, please. Faced with financial challenges due to high debt book, we are out. And I reflected that there is a situation of COVID, but our own assessment shows that actually the finances of the city started collapsing as far as 2011, from the background of the financial meltdown of 2008. So we've got perhaps a low unemployment rate, but people are not gainfully employed. And this is shown by what we are owed, 4.1 billion by domestic clients. Government owes us about 1.9 billion in total. The businesses are owing us about 1.2 billion. So Chair, I must just emphasize that we are moving aggressively, in particular on government and business, because it's our view that the government is not setting a good example. They are putting us under intervention, but government is unwilling to fulfill their part in terms of our recovery. Next slide, please. As I've reflected, we've had 3 consecutive years with qualified report. We had improvements in 2020. We got an entity for electricity, Centlec. You'll see the comparison. Their books have not been so bad, except in 2018. It's when these books are combined that we've had a very bad financial health, in particular on audit outcomes. Next slide, please. Talking to our road infrastructure, I think generally we must all accept that the continuing rainfalls as well as other factors are leading to the deterioration of networks. And for us, it has become very, very bad. We are projecting an 804 million budget deficit in terms of repairing our roads. Approved budget is about 96.3 million just for the ceiling, and it's not sufficient. We need about 112 million per annum for resealing or resurfacing of tarred roads for the next 10 years. 891 million per annum required for upgrading from gravel to tarred roads for the next 10 years. This excludes informal settlements. So we're requiring about 906.7 million in the next 10 years that we have projected that from our own sources will not be able to attain. Next slide, please. What is required for gravel roads is 561 million per annum. Budget required for periodic maintenance of tarred roads is around 170 million per annum. Total required maintenance budget is about 731 million. And in terms of our realistic budget, only 20 million was approved for maintenance. So we got that 711 million deficit. Next slide, please. In terms of our population access to water, the community survey of 2016 showed that at least about 52% of our population does have piped water inside their yard. About 39% does have piped water inside their houses, and about 4% piped water on community stand. We can go to the next slide, please. In terms of delivery of potable water, we got the total backlogs of about 54,805 households. We estimate that Mangaung could be having about 300,000 households currently. So what we the total requirement for internal reticulation is about 1.370 million or billion. So total required for bulk infrastructure is about 900 million. So the grant total is 2.270 billion. So the budget deficit for 1 year horizon, approved budget for 21-22 is about 114 million. Total required for internal reticulation is about 1.370 million. So what we require for bulk infrastructure is about 900 million. There is a shortfall of about 2.156 million. Next slide, please. I think we are the metro with the highest level in terms of backlogs to current sanitation backlogs at around 54,698. This consists of both the buckets as well as the VIP toilets. The highest number is found in Bloemfontein and Botshabelo in particular. Next slide, please. In terms of delivery of decent sanitation, as I reflected, those are the same numbers as the first slide. I think there's a repetition here. We can go into the next slide, please. So in terms of electrification, on both formal and informal settlements, we are connecting about 1,500 households in informal settlements, for which the city will spend about 39 million for that purpose. We are also planning to undertake a feasibility study for solar generation project to the value of 1.5 million, installation and upgrading of bulk infrastructure to the amount of 236 million. We have also planned to install about 28 high-mast lights to the value of 14.5 million, 15 high-mast lights at the design stage, and together with construction will amount to 7.5 million. Almost 5,037 households in informal settlements still require electricity provision. The city needs intervention to the value of 131 million. Next slide, please. In terms of service delivery, we faced the biggest challenge we are faced with is collection of waste. For mostly formalized areas, we are able to cover, but at a serious high cost of about 50 million extra on overtime per annum. But we are implementing plans to bring in a shift system probably during the course of this same year, not the financial year, but this year. We have not been able to recruit the sufficient numbers of the employees. We in fact have about only 40% of resources, but we are planning to augment that as we have picked that the waste is one of the biggest challenges that we are faced with as the city. The next one, next slide, please. Yeah, we've got about three buyback centers for the city currently undergoing repairs, and the other one was vandalized. We are getting help also from the Department of Environmental Affairs for the repair and operationalization of these buyback centers, which will also contribute a bit to our economy. The waste pickers working in our landfill sites have now been formalized. And there are three cooperatives that the city is supporting in terms of those informal settlements. We do also provide some training for the waste pickers through the assistance mainly of the private sector. Below is the tonnage of waste per landfill site for the city. Thanks. Next slide, please. Yes, we are saying that waste collection is actually very expensive, but there's always resistance when we try and increase resources. For that purpose, it includes fleet, it includes personnel. We have made calculations of what may be required, but there are plans afoot also to go into what we term a full maintenance lease rather than an outright purchase of trucks for the removal of waste for the city. Next slide, please. What libraries, mostly in Bloemfontein. Most of these amenities were built in 2016. We have not been able to create any extra capacity with regard to some of these amenities because of the financial situation we find ourselves in. Next slide, please. Yeah, this is the slide that talks to recreational facilities. We've got intervention, intergovernmental intervention, mainly from the province, that has resulted in creation of additional parks for the city. Next slide, please. With regard to human settlements, there are mainly the two mega human settlements project that the city is currently implementing to deliver sustainable and integrated human settlement, which is the Hillside View, as well as Vista Park 2 and 3. The two were actually mentioned by the president in the State of the Nation address, I think it's last year. The developments are mixed-use programs integrating the surrounding areas. These are multi-year projects with high social and economic impact, high employment prospects linked to construction phases and permanent employment during operation. These projects are creating value, reduce unemployment inequality, poverty, and they promote integration and transformation in the spaces in the city. Next slide, please. Okay, these are some of the statistics with regard to provision of electricity. I think we can keep this one. In terms of governance and management, we've got about 3,626 employees with almost the same number, 3,324 vacancies, which effectively also impede us doing our work. But we've also assessed that some of the posts that have been filled are mostly at the high end, not addressing the service delivery related issues. So we are currently also, if you look at for instance, the office of the city manager, we have drastically reduced in terms of our new structure, the number of posts there in the political offices. We have drastically cut the posts to a reasonable number. So we think some of these posts were not really necessary. For some of the posts, we have replaced the posts with service delivery innovation. So we are currently also busy finalizing what we need to take to the council as a structure that we think can work effectively for us, with a more bigger focus being on service delivery departments. Next slide, please. The high impact projects, as I've reflected, the Vista Park project, this is what we're going to spend together with the other spheres of government, mainly the national government through the Department of Human Settlements, the USDG, as well as the private sector and the development finance institutions. Next slide, please. In terms of, I think I touched on this one, In terms of construction progress, Vista Park 2 is at 96% on both water and sewer pipes. The budget spent to date is at around 24 million. For construction purposes, as I reflected, 100% on water pipes for Vista Park 3. Practical completion is reached on the sewer pipe and completion certificate issued. So today, Vista Park 3 is at 25 million. So it's been allocated about 27.5 million in the current year. Remember, we are not really building human settlements, but we are working with the partners that I've reflected, mainly the private sector. So our main role is the provision of the bulk services. Next slide, please. In terms of beneficiation during construction, about 3,500 individuals got both jobs as well as skills from the project. In terms of SMMEs, about 100 youth women. In terms of employment opportunities, it's about 11,200 from the triple BEE, from the women about 8,400, youth 8,400, and persons with disability about 80. Next slide, please. Still with regard to sustainable human settlements, breaking new grounds, total expected about 1,200, 600 completed. We're also projecting to build about 50. For military veterans, 25 completed to date. Land restitution, 19 target, 19 achieved. With regard to social housing, it's 402 in the entire phase one. 240 have been completed to date. Next slide, please. High impact programs. The industrial park revitalization, the agri park, the ICT digital hub, the MEC touched massively on this project, but we also have the IPTN integrated public transport network, which we are hoping to launch now in December. We are also hoping to open a steel manufacturing plant in the near future. Next slide, please. So our turnaround plan, of course, remains our financial recovery plan, the economic recovery plan, the one plan, Mangaung Rural Development Strategy, as well as city development strategy. We are working with the city network on the city development strategy. We are working with National Treasury and the province on the financial recovery plan. The others we are working on ourselves. And of course, there is one plan that is coordinated at district level by the province. Next slide, please. Thank you very much. This is our presentation, and I think Chairperson, I kept to the 11 minutes. Thanks very much.
Sorry, it took 13 minutes more. Actually, also the report, I mean, the last two slides really should have been the focus of the presentation. Because the committee deals with economic development, we are more interested on the economic development in the city, and your LED unit, perhaps working with the agencies that are responsible for economic development, if the municipality has any other issues that relate to human settlements. They belong to other committees, but when we do our report, compile our report, we can make recommendations to the relevant committees to follow up with the issues, particularly the challenges that you've identified, but also those that relate to the issues of the section 139 and the fact that you indicate that it is not being followed with resources in terms of the intervention. So some of the issues will make recommendations to the relevant committees when we compile the report that will be tabling in the plenary session of the NCOP. Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, can we have then comments and questions on the three presentation, MEC, Mr. Libelo, and Mr. Silo presentations. Honorable Dango, go first, followed by Honorable Moimang, Honorable Matibula, and Honorable Boshoff. In that order, please.
Honorable
Mshodi. You just indicate also who your question is directed to. If it's directed to the three, then you can indicate as such. Honorable Dango, you go first.
Yeah, my question is focused at all three. One is the question of the challenge of transport. Is there adequate transport between, say, Bloemfontein and Botshabelo? Is there adequate transport, rail transport, that runs from there to there? Are there any plans to get rail transport going in that direction? Because there are two roads always for finance, for trade. The one is a financial road. The other one is a physical road. So I'm concerned about the physical road. I'm also concerned about the financial road. The DBSA and IDC are wholesale funders. How are we going to translate their funding to get down to local people and other banks being involved and being drawn into that process where they can actually fund the kind of things that we need to fund to develop? My other question is, I see that agriculture is a very low base, and I think the Free State could be an agricultural export problem. So yes, it's an agricultural issue, but export is a trade issue. And the Free State could look at the goods and services such as wheat, but could also start looking at matters such as beef and cattle and sheep for export. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dango. Honorable Moimang.
Thank you, Chair. Before my question, I wanted to check the other two presentations, the DTI and the Transnet. Are we going to have them after?
We're going to have them after, yes.
Okay.
After we're done with the three, yeah.
Okay, Chair. It would be nice to have follow the show that please let me think, because one of the questions that I wanted to pose was really the alignment between the Mangaung local economic plans together with the provincial one, but at the same time take into account the role that is played by the TIC within the context of the DDM in the space of the Mangaung Metro.
You can continue, Honorable Moimang, even if some of the questions relate to DTIC and the Transnet. When they report, they will also touch on those.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
The first one relates to the local economic development plan of Mangaung Metro, which to me, I was trying to look at a slide that speaks specifically to economic development. My assumption is that it is inclusive of what I read, because that's where
I think most of the issues that necessarily one would expect them to be under economic development are appearing under municipal services together. But I think this point is important in the sense that one of the expectations of a local council is not only the provision of the basic services, but among them is the promotion of local economic development. And the point that you raised correctly, so it's quite critical, but clearly given the entry from which we are coming from, in the sense that you would expect the integrated development plan of municipality at the core of it must be a local economic development. So the question will be, in terms of what has been presented by the NEC around various economic development programs and also those that were raised by Free State Development Corporation, at what point do they interface? Because in terms of what has been presented by the NEC, there was reference to the master plans, master sector plans, which definitely are an integral part of our economic recovery and reconstruction plan. And correctly so, the MEC has given a meaning to that under the People's Program towards full recovery and reconstruction. And the reference to the master sector plans was specifically around how do we take this process forward. But it will be important just to get a sense in terms of the four Malawi Metro, what is the tangible program around this sector plans? Are they interfacing with, just to get a sense in terms of breakdown, in terms of the sector plans in Malawi, how far are they given the point that I raised earlier on to say, from what was presented by the municipal manager, he made no reference to these master sector plans, and we expect given the centrality of Malawi as a bigger contributor towards the province GDP, we'd expect these plans to be an integral part of the Malawi local economic development plan. So it is important just to understand do they engage? Because if they engage, then one would have expected the municipal manager in his presentation to succinctly isolate those areas of intervention and interface. The second point around VISTA program. I was a bit confused when the Vista Park projects 2 and 3, when the municipal manager said that they are only limiting themselves to the provision of bulk services as part of their only contribution, because they are working with the private sector. And they are not building houses. So it will be important to get a sense in terms of who is the intended beneficiary of this program if their work is only limited to the provision of bulk services. And he has correctly pointed out that the president this program is part and parcel of the presidential project. Now the third one relates to the difficulty that the MM raised around failure by various stakeholders to pay for their municipal services indicated the domestic as 4.1 billion, and then government 1.9 billion, and business at 1.2 billion. And the MM was very vocal in terms of the failure on the part of government to come to their rescue. And he said the government is not playing a fair game while they are putting them under administration. At the same time, they are not paying their debt, which is very profound. And therefore, one would expect the MEC to be heading to this point. It would be important to get a sense from the MEC in terms of what measures have been put in place to alleviate this burden on the part of the municipality, because you would expect the government to be a leading part in terms of paying for its services, and there's a way I want to believe that the Treasury or even the Economic Development Department can play in terms of ensuring that all these government departments are able to honor their dues. But beyond that, the MM is more pronounced and vocal on the failure of the government, but he's silent on business. What could be the reason? Because one would expect the same tone leveled and discharged against government, provincial government, to be meted out against business so that business can also pay. It's quite important and would probably want to be updated in terms of the timeline so that at least we are able to alleviate this burden on the shoulder of the municipality. Other than that, Chair, I think the presentation by the MEC